Well, last week, we did the very un-British thing of turning to people who are sat near us. It's a terrifying time for some people. Some people haven't recovered from that, and my apologies. But we just spoke about the kind of work that we do, and we turned to the person. I think there's only one thing that's worse than asking people to do that. I think probably asking them to do it on a second occasion is that. And here's actually what I'd like you to do. I'd like you just to turn to someone who's sat next to you. You can do it in twos or threes. There's no rules. And I just want you to think about the... As you think about work, whether you're retired, whether you're looking for work, whether you're in paid work or not, as you just think about your work, I want you to think about the hardest thing. And it may be that actually you are very Genesis 2 and work is just a complete walk in the park at the moment. Think back then to a time when work was really tough. And I want you to think, just what is the toughest thing? Is it possibly a difficult boss, a difficult working relationship, the amount of work, feeling out of your depth? Don't know, but you'll have just a minute to share that as you think about the hardest thing about the reality of work. A minute and we'll come back together. Thanks. Okay, let's come back together. Hope that wasn't too painful a process for people. No one has broken down into tears, so I'm very. I hope that wasn't too painful. But clearly, there was much to say as we share the reality of working in a broken world, and it can be tough. So I hope it's some of those issues that we'll start to look at together. And really, there are just two things that I think we're going to have time to look at this lunchtime as we look at this quite rich passage, this letter from Paul written to a group of early Christians in Colossae. There's just two things that I want to look at. And really, the first is the reality of working in God's world, a broken world, and instruction for working in a broken world. Those are just the two things that I want us to think about. And I think it's impossible to do any thinking together about the world of work without being realistic about the nature of work that we've just been speaking about there. As we burst into discussion, it's impossible really without talking about the reality of work. And to do that, I thought it'd be helpful to go back to where we left off last week, really, to remind ourselves about the nature of this broken world, just to see what happened to work. We left Genesis chapter 2 in this perfect position of work, really. And it's just worth reminding ourselves. So I wonder if you can just flick back. I only ask you to look at one extra passage this lunchtime. Turn back to Genesis 3, and it's page 6 in the church Bibles. And we're looking at Genesis 3, verses 17 to 19. As we go on from Genesis chapter 2, to look at what happened to the world as sin entered the world. Here's 17 to 19. So Adam, God said, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you will return. When humans rebelled against God, sin entered into creation, and creation was changed as a result. So as we move on from Genesis chapter 2, as we come to this moment that humankind rebelled against God, sin entered the world, and creation changed, the character of the world changed, and it figures therefore that the character of work changed as well. So as the character of creation changed, the character of work changed. Those scientists amongst you, either amateur or professional, will know the immovable law of cause and effect. Cause and effect, that every action has a reaction. And if we look at those verses, 17 to 19 of Genesis chapter 3, we see the effect of the broken relationship between God and his world. The effect of that broken relationship between God and his world. And it's helped me to see that really this broken relationship, the change in the character of the world and the character of work, isn't so much a punishment for man turning his back on God, but it's just the reality of sin entering into the world. As sin enters in to spoil God's perfect creation, creation groans. It's offset. It's set out of alignment. It's the effect of the cause of sin entering into the world. So that's what's happened. Creation out of alignment, offset, out of the perfect way that God created it. And I thought that was just worth seeing, just so we understand, as we look at Paul talking about the reality of working in a broken world. It's really important just for us to see that and understand it. So flick back, if you will, to Colossians, where we're spending the bulk of our time, this letter from the Apostle Paul, Colossians 3, and page 1184, 1184. So as I said, letter from Paul, writing to an early group of Christians, an early Christian community, and he's writing to them about the results of sin entering the world. So as we fly through from Genesis chapter 3 through to Colossians chapter 3, Paul, still very much in Genesis chapter 3, is talking about the reality of working in that out of alignment, broken, offset world. And it struck me that the passage we read is breathtakingly honest about the reality of God's broken world. It's breathtakingly honest. And as Paul describes it, as Paul describes sin, we see creation groaning. You can almost hear it. You'll see it there in verse 5. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature. So this earthly world, the broken world. And what do we see? Sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. And we know the reality of some of those things reflected in our work, perhaps work that we've come from this morning. More of that picture of the broken world in verse 8. Anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language. I mean, these may appear to be quite extreme words, and I hope that none of them sum up, or I hope every single one doesn't sum up your working environment that you've come from this morning. I think it would be a shame if all of those things summed up your working environment. But I suspect that as you shared some of the tough things about work that you know now or work that you've known, that some of those things actually came to the fore. Some of those things would sum up some of the things that we spoke about. Broken relationships, anger, revenge. I suspect they were there in some of the conversations that we had. A couple of days ago, I was having a chat with someone who's part of the All Souls family, who described his senior manager as being a toxic boss. In fact, that manager's been a toxic boss for 26 years. He described him as a bully. Anger and rage would have been words that summed that person up. And I wonder what the reality of sin in a broken world and sin in our working environment, I wonder what that looks like for you. I wonder what that looks like, how that manifests itself, either in something you know now or something you've known. Perhaps it's someone who's threatened by you and so they're constantly putting you down. Perhaps it's someone who wants your job. Perhaps it's a boss or the boss of a boss who's putting unreasonable demands on you. I wonder where the reality of that broken world in the world of our work, where the reality of that is for us. Well, we sometimes pretend it's different, don't we? We try to gloss over the reality. If you ever download the details of a company you're thinking of applying for, or you think of investing in, the company brochures will often talk about the culture of a company being a family feel, a culture of mutual respect. Here, the whole place exists under a culture of encouragement. And in the glossy brochure with the clip art photos of people sharing, smiling at each other or shaking hands, it's those are the things that are always put to the front. But if we're being honest about the places we work, the company details would say, really, company culture can be described as being full of sexual immorality and lust and anger and greed. And these things sum up whatever it is, limited. You know, if we're real and we're honest, then those things are right there at the heart of our working cultures. I wonder if you follow the series on television, Mad Men, about the beginning of the advertising industry in America. It's a great series, but really sexual immorality and lust and evil desires would sum up the culture of that company as the second series gets screened on British TV screens. Really, those things would sum up the culture of that organisation. If you're more mainstream BBC One than Holby City or Casualty or those, we see plenty of God's broken world, the broken world of work, in those kind of working environments. And as we saw, as we read on in Genesis chapter 3, humankind rebelled against God and moved God from being at the centre to man being in the centre of the world. That's what humankind did as it rebelled against God. We made the rules and we decided how we'd live. And I know the continuing reality of that in my life. The times that I decide to live in a way that puts me at the centre of the world rather than God. And it's the reality of that that we're looking at this lunchtime. And the world has continued to grow and develop on that basis of humankind putting itself at the centre, its rules, living exactly how it would like to, rather than putting God at the centre. And so that's how society, it's how our world has grown. And that's the reality. It's a reality that many of us have come from to hear this morning. If I could go back to the beginning of my working life about 10 years ago, where I started I left university and started in the world of work, the one thing I wish I'd understood then is the reality of this, the reality of this broken world, and the reality of how that affects our working lives. I wish I'd understood that at the beginning, really, rather than being shocked. So we should expect to see this reflected in our working life, right up to the moment that we die. We should expect to see it. We certainly shouldn't be shocked or surprised. We shouldn't be shocked or surprised. But this reality shouldn't be finished with a full stop or be without hope or encouragement, because the story doesn't finish there. This letter from the Apostle Paul concerns how Christians should live with each other. He's writing particularly to an early group of Christians, saying how they should be behaving together. But these are instructions as well for working in God's world. The amazing thing about this book, as God speaks through it, is that actually we can start to apply it to our working environments as well. So that's the second thing to see, really. Instruction for working in God's world. Instruction for living and working in God's world. And it's what is titled in the passage here as Holy Living. It's what's titled as Holy Living. For our purposes, instruction for working in God's world as Christians. Verses 1 to 4 of Colossians 3. Since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. And the first thing to say about these instructions for Christians is, the first thing to see is since then, Paul starts. We're back in the territory of cause and effect. Paul's following through the theme of cause and effect. Since then, Paul gets this cause and effect flag right at the top of this passage. But what is the since then that Paul is talking about? What's the since then that Paul's talking about? Christians aren't good people, but they're bad people who know that they've been forgiven. So let's not be mistaken. Christians aren't good people. They're bad people who know they've been forgiven. They're not people who've managed to pay the price of their rebellion against God, but people that know that that price has been paid for them. Those of us are Christians. That's what we believe. And the result is that we are able to be in relationship with God and assured of the promise of spending eternity with him in the new creation. This extraordinary truth. The extraordinary promise at the heart of Christianity. These are the promises for Christians, and it's the reality of living in that that Paul is urging his readers to do. Live in the reality of that promise, Paul is saying. Since then, therefore, yes, a broken world. Yes, the reality of working in and around sin. Since then, therefore. Paul is setting out a way of living in a broken world that is a mirror of Christ's life and death. A way of living that is in tune with a new identity as forgiven, free, loved children of Christ. That's the identity he says you have. So live it out. Live in this broken world as that. Free to be able to offer compassion. Free to offer kindness, free to be humble, free to be gentle, free to be patient, free to be forgiving. The promise is that in this Christian's new identity, we'll be free to exhibit this countercultural, counter-world behaviour. As we read back, as we head back into whatever we're doing this afternoon, we have to understand what we've read and what this means for us in terms of our working activity. So what does this mean for us as we head back this afternoon into whatever work we do? Well, firstly, I think it means this. Is our picture of the reality of the world and the reality of the working world right? Is our picture of it right? If it isn't, we'll constantly be shocked and surprised by the way we're treated, by the way that we see other people treated. And understanding this over the last couple of years, as I've understood this, suddenly those things that have previously really upset me feel less personal. I mean, I used to take sin in the workplace, anything that I thought was against me, I used to take it so personally. I think this person made an active decision to upset me. But actually, it's not personal, is it? We should expect to see it. It's just the reality of the broken world and the broken working world. So we shouldn't be shocked and surprised. And certainly for me, the effect it's had is that I've taken it less personally. When we understand, when we have the picture of the reality of the world right, when we understand our new identity in Christ, we can actually start to be agents of grace. And this is what Paul is urging these Christians to be. So as we understand it, as we understand our new identity, we can be agents of grace. We're not shocked bystanders at the state of the world, but active participants in ministering God's grace. So we're not shocked bystanders as we go back into our work this afternoon. We're active participants in ministering God's grace. So back to the question that we spoke about together, that you shared with each other. Back to that question. Well, what does it mean for you to be an agent of grace in that situation? What does it mean for you? Because the Christian has that new identity, and what does it mean for you to be an agent of grace in that situation? Perhaps it means showing forgiveness where it's really hard, and there's nothing harder than when you have to show forgiveness. It's the easiest thing to tell someone else to do, but when it's personal and it hurts and it's affected you emotionally, you've been awake at night, it's very hard. But perhaps it means that. Perhaps it does mean showing forgiveness. And perhaps you've realised that for the first time this lunchtime. Perhaps it means offering someone the chance to get something off their chest about you, giving them the ability to say, look, if there's something I'm doing that's upsetting you, tell me. Perhaps it's letting someone shamelessly take credit for something without trying to get revenge. Perhaps it is saying, actually, I don't need to get revenge in this situation. But what does it mean as you seek to live out that identity, as you see you're free to be an agent of God's grace in a broken world? What does it mean for you? And I thought as I close of some homework that we might like to do together as we do this. I was struck really by this list, ways that we can be agents of grace, not shocked bystanders, but agents of grace. And I was struck by these six things. And here's the homework that I thought we might do. We've printed out onto sheets those six things. And I just wondered, between now and next week, if you put this somewhere prominent, clip it onto the computer monitor or stick it on the fridge or have it in a diary, and actually just think over the next week, how many opportunities does God give you not to be a shocked bystander, but an agent for God's grace? And I think you'll be surprised as we do this together. I think we'll be surprised at how many opportunities we have against these six things. Where will we have the ability to show compassion, to be kind, to be humble, gentle, patient, forgiving? It's unbelievable to think that we won't have on one of these things an opportunity to show this. So at the end, we've got one of these for everyone. They're totally free of charge because they're only a small piece of paper. And clip it anywhere. And you might find it a helpful exercise to do, but the only way it will work is if you put it somewhere prominent, because if not, it will get tucked somewhere you don't see it. But there's something that we might do before we come back next week, just to see where we have an opportunity to do that. Well, look, as we finish this week, a word on where we're going next week as we finish this series. And we're looking at God's new creation. We're looking at work in God's new creation and work in heaven. Timothy said we had a great start to Christianity Explore. We had over a dozen people on the course as it started on Tuesday this week. It's not too late to join, so come and join us. We had a really fantastic time. And you may know that one of the things that you do first on Christianity Explored says, what's the one question that you could ask God if you were sat with God in Starbucks enjoying coffee? What's the one thing that you would say? What's the one thing that you question that you'd have for him? And one of the people said this. They said, actually, I just want to know what heaven's like. I actually would love to know what heaven's like because I can't really get my head around it. And so that was the question this person had, and we're hoping that they'll get an answer by the end of the course. But as I thought about that question, and as I thought about speaking on this passage, it occurred to me as I think of preparing for next week that heaven will be a place without sin. I mean, it's one of the few things that we're told with certainty in the Bible about heaven. It'll be a place without sin. And we know there'll be work in heaven, and so it'll be work without any kind of sin. We'll be back into Genesis 2. And I thought, in some ways, that's all I need to know. I mean, some people want to know whether it is going to be big houses and beaches and whether it's going to be sunny and what age we're going to be. But actually, the thought of perfect work without sin, that's enough for me. Well, look, if that interests you as we finish this series, come back next week as we look more at work in God's new creation. God's redeemed creation. But as I finish, let's pray. Father God, we have been reminded about a wonderful world, the beauty of your creation, but a broken world, the reality of a broken world. And we've thought about how that affects the work that we know or have known. And we hear the challenge from Paul to live out a new identity, an identity of grace. But you know us and you know how hard it is for us to be forgiving and humble and gracious when it's painful. And so we'll ask for your help as we head in back to our working environment before we meet next week. Help us to spot the times that you want us to live out this new identity, not to be shot by standards, but to be agents of your grace. Help us as we think about this in the week to come. And we ask it for your glory. Amen.